welcome to another episode of the Fertility Answers podcast. I'm your host, Neil Chappell, and excited to bring this particular episode to the forefront, where I will finally talk a little bit about coronavirus and COVID-19. I have recorded a couple of COVID podcasts and then decided not to use them because the second I'm done recording them, they are immediately out of date. But I find that it's finally time to do one because we're getting so many questions and comments about the vaccines, and I think it's high time we put in a little bit of information so that you guys have a foundation with which to bring to your providers to have a conversation. Honestly, that's been one of the more difficult things about doing a podcast on this, is that the second I do it, it's immediately out of date because we've learned so much so fast about this virus, and it's really hard to give general information about it. It affects everyone in a very specific fashion. So it's hard to give general knowledge, but I hope that at least this few minutes can give you a foundation to take back to your providers and say, hey, here are my questions, how does this apply to me, and make the right decisions for yourself. So what do we know? Well, we know that COVID-19 is a novel coronavirus strain. It is incredibly infectious, and it affects older population and immunocompromised patients, or patients that have a weakened immune system, in a more severe fashion. Pregnant patients by nature are transiently immunocompromised. Pregnancy is a somewhat immune weakened state, and so they are at more risk for severe reactions than non-pregnant patients of that same age if they were to catch COVID-19. And we see that in the statistics of increased ICU admissions, increased risk for ventilation, and even, unfortunately, increased risk of death. At the present recording of this podcast, over 18 million people have been infected in America, with over 300,000 deaths. So clearly this is a problem that needs addressing. Fortunately, the world has come together and addressed it in a very powerful way, and now we have two vaccines out, both the Pfizer vaccine and the Moderna vaccine. And I'd like to spend the majority of the time talking about that, because that's the most pressing matter at hand for a lot of patients. In the meantime, of course, please follow all the restrictions and guidelines that are in place by your local advisors, and pay attention to what the CDC is saying. Stay at home when possible, limit interactions when possible, social and physical distancing, of course, wash your hands, mask up, and just stay calm while we all work on this together. So let's talk about the vaccine. It's an mRNA vaccine. And everybody's saying mRNA. What is mRNA? So I guess taking it back to the foundations of biology, all of our genetic information, which is basically the blueprints for life, is stored on our DNA. And our DNA sits inside the center of the cell called the nucleus. We need to access that information in order to create the proteins and the machinery that runs our cell. And we do that through mRNA. I think of it as kind of like a fax copy of instructions from the computer that is our DNA. So our cells need to increase a protein or do a function. They will transcribe DNA into mRNA, and that mRNA goes out into the cell to be translated into a protein or a product. The mRNA vaccine uses this really elegant design inside the cell to tell a cell to produce a specific protein that it wants. So in the case of the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccine, we are producing products that mimic parts of the virus, but they themselves are not actually the virus. So it's a really novel and unique way to expose the body to a portion of the virus to allow the immune system to do what it does and establish some sort of immune response without actually encountering the infection itself. These mRNA vaccines cannot get into your genetics or alter your genetics in any way, because mRNA is not DNA. And because they're not actually the virus or the infection, they're not thought to really impact fertility, miscarriage, stillbirth, birth defects, anything at all. There are some rumors going around the media and the blogosphere that, of course, I've been exposed to that just have concerns for the vaccine causing infertility. These are all completely false and have no founding in science. These are presumably thought to be safe for patients that are pregnant, breastfeeding or lactating, or even patients trying to conceive. And they have all been endorsed by all of the governing bodies for women's health and reproduction in America, including the OBGYN group, ACOG, the Maternal Fetal Medicine Group, SMFM, and the My Personal Home, the American Society for Reproductive Medicine, or ASRM. Now, it is important to note that all medicines, all interventions, do come with a list of side effects, and you should know. Anything that you introduce into the body carries out a function in the body, and that results in some sort of effect from whatever intervention that is. If you give a blood pressure medicine, it lowers the blood pressure. If you give an immune medicine, it affects and alters the immune system. And so vaccines are basically an immune medicine. So therefore, you can have side effects, such as a local reaction at the injection site. And that happens in most patients because the immune system recognizes these little proteins that the cells are now expressing as not themselves. And therefore, they will mount a little immune response. And you kind of want that because you want the immune system to say, hey, that's not supposed to be here. That's not me. I'm going to go investigate. And that investigation causes a transient, short immune response that builds up the immunity for when you actually encounter the real virus. That's the thought. So injection site reactions happen in about 8 out of 10 patients. Fatigue, a little over half. Chills, 1 in 3. Patients complained of chills in the large-scale randomized, in the large-scale randomized trials that have been published to date. Some folks complained of muscle or joint pain. About 20 or 30% of patients complained of muscle and joint pain. About half of patients complained of headaches. And of course, fever as well. There can be a transient fever. More likely with the second injection, about 15% of patients complained of fever, particularly with the second injection. I didn't say, but I should have. Both of the vaccines that are available to date under the Emergency Use Authorization Act by the FDA are both two-dose vaccinations. You get one dose, and then 3 weeks later for the Pfizer, and 4 weeks later for the Moderna, you get your second dose. And you're thought to have, you know, kind of established full efficacy by 2 weeks after the second dose. So 5 weeks after you start your dosing, you're considered to be vaccinated. So you can have some fever as well. So it's if you are trying to conceive or if you're pregnant, make sure you are taking folic acid. That's thought to help with any adverse effects you may have with fever. And of course, if you do have a fever, it's safe to take things like Tylenol as an antipyretic. The other question that I've gotten a few times is, what about Bell's palsy? In the Pfizer phase 3 trial, there were 4 patients that had Bell's palsy. Bell's palsy is temporary paralysis of one of the nerves in the face, and it was experienced in 4 patients in that trial. 3 of them were in the vaccine group, and one of them was in the group that actually did not get the vaccine. So it's not really clear that it is associated with the vaccine, but 4 people out of the 30,000 in the trial got it. So it's just worth noting that that could be something to look out for, although the incidence was exceptionally rare. Lastly, from a vaccine standpoint, there's not much information about pregnant women and the vaccine because they were excluded from the studies. Again, with an mRNA vaccine, the potential risks are minimal, though we can't know because it hasn't actually come out in a study. The theoretical potential risks are minimal with an mRNA vaccine, and the benefits being not getting COVID. The reality is that there's a lot of things to consider. The level of activity of the virus in your area, you know, the efficacy of the vaccines that are being offered to date are very promising. More vaccines are going to come out in the near future, and their efficacies may not be the same, so that's a conversation to have. What vaccine am I receiving? How good is it? Finally, what's the risk to you? What other comorbidities do you have? What other exposures do you have? Are you someone that can safely distance themselves living in a maybe more rural area versus a more urban area in healthcare or in a occupation that is more high exposure, etc. There were a couple of editorials that talked about the concern for fever in early pregnancy, but that fever, any of the side effects that were noted in the vaccines, those were all noted to be gone within 2 to 3 days. Whereas if someone were to contract COVID, those symptoms tend to be a lot more prolonged. So is it worth the risk of a low-grade fever for a day to avoid the risk of potential fever for several weeks? It depends on the patient, it depends on the risk profile, etc. And that's why these are the questions that are worth asking your provider about your story and your care. But ultimately, the vaccine should not be refused for any patient that is trying to conceive, already pregnant, or even postpartum and breastfeeding. This is something that in theory should be safe and should be offered, at least in consideration. Finally, vaccines are definitely your choice, and you have the freedom to accept or not this, and that freedom and decision should certainly be respected. So I hope that this quick synopsis for COVID and the vaccine is helpful to put a couple points in your pocket to take to your provider and hopefully answer some questions that you have about where you should be going with your next steps in 2021. I can't wait to see you guys on that side, hopefully talking to patients again and getting more into their stories and the decisions that they're making, as I've intended to do from the start. If you have any further questions or any other thoughts or comments about future topics, please feel free to email us at podcast@fertilityanswers.com. But until then, I look forward to seeing you guys again very soon.